Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey folks, welcome to this week's Hang. This week I have my Broadgrass buddies, and as well as being their own individual solo artists and just all around great people, my friends, my bandmates, Sergio Ortega and Alan Markley. Today we're just going to hang and catch up, and I hope you enjoy this. These conversations would just start in one place and end somewhere very different. And we end with Alan giving us a beautiful version of one of his new songs.
You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Alan, Sergio, welcome to the Hang on this, I guess, Broadgrass special.
Yeah, Broadgrass.
Finally.
Yeah.
I feel it might be remiss if we don't sing a song or something.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Are we?
Yeah.
What can we do, though?
I mean, we could do
Fun Ways to Die.
Or you can definitely sing one of your new ones.
Oh, I'd love to.
Because we should talk about your music.
I'd love to talk about that. Did I tell you that I got Rebecca to record on
my most recent song? Rebecca, yeah. Our cellist of the Broadgrass band. She's amazing.
I was chatting with her today, and she said, "Oh, you're going to see Ramin?" I'm like, "Yeah, we're going to do the podcast thing." He's like, "Got to talk about me." So I just
got on my agreement. The last gig in UK.
Yeah, she would.
Okay, I'm better. It's like her, and then who's the guitar player as well?
Wickes.
Wickes. Trying to remember his name. I was like, he had a cool name. Has a cool name.
Wonder how dad life is going for him.
He's having a good time.
It's great. You know, the pictures make Should it look like him? He's like, yeah, let's call him.
How you doing, buddy?
So when's the last gig we did?
That would have been...
Oh, you couldn't make that gig. Why couldn't you make that gig?
I was doing circus.
You on tour?
Yeah.
You were.
That's right.
You joined the circus.
Literally.
That was your excuse.
The wild, yeah.
That was the Apollo gig. You were there for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking,
so to miss that.
Had you been able to make it, we'd still would have kept Vickis, and we were just
all the guitars.
Oh. I heard some of it. He sounds great. He's a good player.
Yeah.
Had you made
sings as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, great voice.
Less bouzouki for me, I think, if you had been there.
Wait, did you really play bouzouki?
Yeah.
Oh, that's rad. Man, I learned how
to play bouzouki for that gig.
But then I found out you all got tailored suits, and I go... I'm like on the bus in the middle of like Utah. No one to talk to. I'm like, they got suits.
You still wear that suit?
Yeah. Well, time to time. I don't dress up that much, you know.
What about the jacket I gave you after the Japanese?
Oh, I wore that a lot. Got compliments on it every time.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember that. You still have it?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
That would look good with your music when you're on stage and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's like... I love it. It's a little broader because you're a little broader than me.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's a muscly jacket, you know?
Huge.
Well, I think when I got that, though, I was injured, wasn't I? I was just still coming off my neck injury.
Yeah.
So I was, that's right. The smallest
because
I was.
Smaller for you.
And I remember you were taking a...
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, you were in pain, dude. That was like really worrisome.
And here we are. I'm in pain again.
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah.
We got to... Disarmates my toe.
Oh, that's right.
We have to stop doing this. Just hang out when you're injured.
You got up just now, and just watching you walk, that like,
I'm
it's
in
like
so
it
much
doesn't
pain right
work.
Now.
It looks like it doesn't work.
So what is it?
So it's a PRP injection.
Okay.
So with Funny Girl, I've been in pain since probably April. My feet with the dancing and the shoes.
Whoa.
Something's gone wrong.
Yeah.
But I've just been doing what I can.
Yeah.
And now I'm at the point where I'm like, it hurts to walk. If I'm not in sneakers. Oddly, like, it's okay when I'm working out. It's affected something, so you do what you can. But every night on stage, I'm, like, biting down on the mouthpiece, as they say, and just getting through that dance number and hoping for the best.
What is it? Just the dancing, something about that dance.
Something that's deteriorated my toe.
Yeah.
So I did a cortisone shot 3 months ago, and that gave me a couple of weeks of relief. And then lately, it's just the pain is back. So yesterday, I had a PRP injection, which they take your blood... They separate your plasma from your blood and they shoot the plasma back in the toe.
Whoa.
And she put like, the doctor put like 20 or 30% extra.
Oh, okay, so that's why it's even more full.
So your toes entirely full of.
But we didn't really talk about aftercare. It was very quick and done. Okay, and at that point, I'm like, all right, well, nothing. At this point, everything hurts less than that needle going in my toe. So I was like, okay. So I'm hobbling out, but I'm thinking it's just like the cortisone, and the more I walk, it'll just walk it off. And I went to the last match screening, thinking this is what shit, just keep walking on it. It got worse and worse. I went home, didn't stay for the film.
Were people wondering if like Cardona like body slammed you at the event?
They're like, oh, this last match really took it out of him. Yeah. Whoa. I'm in so much pain. So I'm like, I can't do the show tonight. Now I'm sat talking to you. Everything's good. Yeah. But you know when your body's tired and your eyes are tired from just like constant pain?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I text the doctor. I'm like, is this bad? She goes, oh, no, your body's taken to it. It's good. It's reacting. So you'll probably be out of the show. I should have told you that. I'm like, yeah.
You should have told me I was going to lose some wage.
Yeah.
This is painful. And then because I'm supposed to fly to Arizona, by the time this will be out and all this will be, hopefully I'll be running.
Yeah. Mm.
Like a naked, innocent schoolboy through the grassy fields by this point.
In slow motion.
But I'm like, I'm supposed to fly on Thursday to go do concerts in Arizona and Fort Lauderdale. Yeah, I'm like, I couldn't think. Like if I had to fly tonight, no way.
No. Especially that cabin pressure change. Like it's just. When you're throbbing like that, like if you have like some kind of ache anywhere, it like makes it 10 times worse because, you know, the expanding. You'll be fine, though.
So you have new music out.
Actually, I have a new one coming out.
Foot in mouth.
In like a week or so as well.
What's that called?
Oh, God. What is it? Oh, O-A-A-E.
O-A-A-E.
Yeah, I have posted zero things about it. So this is the official first announcement of the
whole. Well, by the time this comes out, it's going to already be number one in the charts.
Yeah.
What's the story behind this one?
That song. So that song is about a time in me and Nicole's marriage when things were feeling kind of, tired. In a long relationship, sometimes you can like you have to continually invest in it and work on it. And,
do you?
Sure.
Yeah. Turns out. and
notes.
Let me put this.
Yeah. Well, we can take a second for notes. And it was about a time when we had things had grown kind of stale in our relationship, and it was just about the feelings surrounding that. You know, Nicole's been an important part of my life for so long.
And you've been together how long?
We started dating in 2004. October of 2004.
Coming up to 20, man.
Yeah, I know. Almost.
Wow.
So we host this annual Glugfest. I think you've been to a
Glugfest. Yeah,
been to one or just invited?
I've been to one, and I keep missing it. She's Swedish or Norwegian?
Swedish. Yeah, and we realized that this year, I think it was our 20th Glugfest.
Wow.
Which means that we started hosting Glugfest before we were legally allowed to drink. We were like sending our older friends to go buy the liquor to make
rebels.
To make this like Swedish mulled wine.
Do you go through the night? Do you see the sunrise?
Oh, no. I mean, back then we did.
Yeah.
But like now we're parents.
It's 11:30.
We just like,
Glugged out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One cup of glug and then I'm just out like a light.
Skål.
Yeah.
Can Soren say glug?
Oh, yeah. He's actually learning Swedish. He's getting good.
I've seen some of the Instagram stories and it's like the way, like, what was it? The joke? He was reading from like a joke book or something?
He loves that joke book. Actually, he loves Dog Man.
And just he knows the punchline is coming.
Yeah.
But he says, you know, it's
oh my
like
God, you're so good at the impression. It's like he was here. It's incredible.
There, but he's like, kind of looking, sneaky up, eyes. He's like,
are you gonna laugh at this? Yeah. You're gonna laugh at this.
She's like knee slapper.
Yeah.
So that was pretty honest of you to. That's great that you can talk about that with the song. Was when you write like that. So this is a new album, or are you doing song by song?
I'm doing song by song. And I wrote this. This was something I wrote a while ago and then produced and then like left on the shelf for a while and, you know, and mixed and mixing it to put out with all this other stuff I've been putting out.
So the previous one that's out now, what's that called?
Well, there are three or four of them out. The one that came out just before that one was also incredibly personal. What was that one called? I always forget what I named the songs.
It was what? Elephant?
Oh, Elephant in the Room was that was a COVID song. Like, can we pretend there's no elephant in the room? Like, can we just like, it was about, you know, being with people and being like, can we talk about anything but COVID? Can we just like have a fun night and like not think about it and just pretend that this whole world doesn't exist and that we're just living life, you know?
Yeah.
But the one that was most recently out was about being honest with my parents about something that I hadn't been honest or hadn't not lied about, but hadn't told them.
Oh, really?
You know? Yeah. And there's a lot of things.
So
like,
without telling us what that was, yeah. Did you have that conversation?
I did. Yeah, yeah.
How was that?
It went well. If you listen to the song,
okay. And what's that song called? I crashed a car, Dad.
Yeah, I never know. I never know.
It
what the
was
songs
me.
Are called.
In parentheses, so
I
sorry.
Broke what the lamp in '86.
I forget what I called that one too. Well, there's only like four songs that I should remember them.
You keep talking about songs. I'm gonna look up your songs.
Okay. You can tell me what they're called. I always go through like six or seven name options for these songs, and then, but yeah. Anyway, I love the sort of gay community gave us this idea of coming out, and it's like so applicable to so many things in life. You know, you could be an atheist or you could be a liberal or a conservative, or you could be a gay or, you know, anything.
Mm. If you had your way.
Yeah.
That's that what you're talking about now?
Is that the one where you're looking kind of sad?
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that photo.
Is there a song called Whatever? Or is that a lyric from it?
Whatever? Oh, no, that's a lyric from it. Yeah,
that song
that's aching. That's called aching.
Aching.
Whatever keeps you from aching. That was also that was about someone else going through a hard time.
I remember when I listened. I love that track.
Yeah, I think that's been the one that's I think been the best received. If I was going to play one on acoustic, I'd probably play that.
Yeah,
one.
I had that on repeat for a while. That's a good track. I like that. That is a really good track.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Will you play that later?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
Whatever keeps you aching.
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah. What's that?
Whatever keeps you aching.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, man, that's infectious.
Oh, thank you.
It's lovely.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
What's going on with music with you?
Well, I'm still teaching quite a bit. I haven't
gigged. You do these workshops,
much.
Right?
Yeah, I do these full band workshops at this place called Music Makers. I've been there like 2015, so yeah. Almost 8 years now.
What's the prerequisite to get involved with that sort of workshop?
So it's usually adults who are not professionals, but like they're professionals in, you know,
in life.
Yeah, in life.
They have jobs.
But yeah, they're doctors, lawyers, you know, wonderful people, you know, and maybe they played, you know, they kind of played recreationally or maybe they played a lot when they were younger, but then life happens, they have kids, now the kids are all grown, they're ready to retire. So that's kind of the demographic, and they're really into like the most popular genres, classic rock. So, you know, they just want to rock out, and it's hysterical. Awesome. Because a lot of times they don't know, like they, you know, they practice in a room by themselves or like with headphones or something because they don't want to upset, you know,
yeah,
you know, whoever. But, you know, and then it's like, oh, sounds a lot better when I'm at home. Which is hysterical, and I still hear that. Like, yeah. Every time, it sounds so much better when I'm home.
Buddy, I say that, like, sometimes sing, I'm like, it sounded better in the shower.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it, you know, and I'm like, well, it's like, look, this is what it's like to work with other people. Like, the energy changes, but also the sounds change. Like, you usually, in your room, you're typically playing at really low volumes.
Also, yeah. Typically playing with Led Zeppelin. Or
yeah, exactly.
It's one like of us was really so good on the solo.
When I was accompanying Led Zeppelin, it sounded great.
It sounded right. I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, getting them in a room is like, you know, getting some back in the box. You know, it's like, no, you come here. And it's like, they're all wanting to turn up really, like, they don't know. My job as coordinator is to basically, you know, get them to sound as cohesive as possible while also not making them, like, play and shout on top of one another. Because some of them just, like, they get so excited, they have no middle yet.
Right.
So it's like they either know how to play really low where you can't hear them, or they're just screaming into the mic, or, you know, the drummer is just, you know, everyone thinks they're Bonham, you know, except without knowing the thing. And, you know, it's like, okay, let's back it up a little bit. So this goes on for like 8 weeks. You need to do...
Oh, it's 8 weeks for these students. That's
amazing. 2 to 3 hours per rehearsal, dependent on like the scheduling.
2-3 times a week?
No, once a week. And if there's like a holiday, sometimes we skip that week.
Right.
And then by the end of that cycle, we actually perform. We take them and perform. And I'm on stage with them, so they don't like, you're going to be there? You're going to be there? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I'll be there with you, and I got you, because I'm leading them. And yeah, we do like a half-hour set. It's like eight or nine songs. And by the end of it, they have a ball. And usually, like, I do have some, like, students who didn't play at all, didn't sing at all, and now they're, like, up there, more confident. Like, that's kind of the rewarding thing, is to see that, like, they've, you know, elevated themselves, and I know that I had a hand in that. And, you know, I've always got some nice emails and,
nice.
You know, just send me a size. I was like, I want to know, you know. I've had a few people, like, it really nice, you know, like, one student was just like, I just want you to know, you changed my life. I was really in a down spot. Like some of these people, you know, they're looking for an outlet. They're looking for a way to forget about the BS, you know,
was this
life.
Here before COVID, this workshop?
Yeah, it started, I started with it in 2015.
Okay.
And I've been going on ever since. Well, COVID obviously halted that for a little while. And Music Makers was relocating, and it took them like a year longer, I think, to build the new facility, which is beautiful. By the way, they have like 9 new rooms. They have like a recording studio now, and you know, like one like main room where you can do performances if you want, or you know, like you know, for example, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. They'll be in there. They'll lock it down for like 10 days to like rehearse. Because I don't know if you know anything about Trans-Siberian Orchestra. They do, you know, seasonal.
Yeah.
So they do. But I guess how they do it is they have a band out west, they have a band in the middle, and then they have a band in the east. That's how they do it. So it like cuts costs.
Right.
Because they have like these big productions, Fire and Snowflakes, whatnot. But yeah, they have 3 separate bands and then 3 separate like trucks with all the stuff in it. Whoa. But they'll lock out the room for like 10 days because it's mainly a lot of synth. It's a lot of keyboards and everything's pre-programmed and they have the set ready to go to make sure it's timed.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard, you know, I know a couple of the guys in there. It's usually like the same crew year in, year out. But it's a cool, one of the few productions I know they can get away with that. I know for a while, like a band like U2, they had like a west, Midwest, and then east. So different semi-trucks in order to cut costs. Because if you're trying to transport from one part of the country to the other, that starts to get really, really expensive, especially fuel. Now, mind you, that was 10, 15 years ago. So now, even more so, these touring acts are looking for a way to, all right, how do we cut costs even more? So it's like we're downsizing, you know, maybe smaller band, more tracks, and then, you know, so on and so forth.
See, we never had this problem with Broadgrass.
Mm-mm.
We're always the band of the people.
Yeah.
Bring the banjo.
Yeah.
A nice suit.
Whose car can we borrow?
It's like, Ramin, you got your truck?
Yeah, okay. I can take 4 of us.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I loved that run that we did where we were just sort of stationed in London and just going off and doing shows all over the UK. That was so cool.
Oh, I love that. That was.
That felt like show of the people for the people.
Oh, man, I would love to do that again, too.
Yeah, unexpectedly warm during that time as well. Like, we had some really nice days. So it'd be, like, super green, like, fields for... It felt endless.
Yeah.
You know, and then we got to, like...
We got north, which was great.
Edinburgh was awesome. I wish we had a little more time there, but I know we had... Because that was Burns Day? We were there?
Yeah.
That was fun. Mm-hmm. The choir.
Oh, the choir.
And didn't y'all like, Nick did like arrangements, right?
Yeah, me and Nick so and I fun. Were both doing arrangements for the choir.
That was
so good.
So fun.
Yeah. We actually had a choir rehearsal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I loved it. I loved
like, he was conducting them.
Yeah.
You're like, we didn't want to arrange for a choir. I'm like, you're going to give me a choir?
Yeah. And Nick had like, you looked like happy little kids. Up there.
Oh, yeah. We were both
like,
pretty excited.
You know, you big blue eyes and you go. And then Nick did his thing, and he's got the grin, so he's like,
"Yeah, you could tell he was happy." He does happy. Nick does happy a lot cooler than I do happy. I think
he does. He's so slick about it,
and he's like, very
man.
His eye smile. He's just like,
he smizes. Eye smile.
He does the eyebrow thing. Yeah. You know, he never like gives too much. Like, it's he's so expressive with his face.
Again, it's like he's here. It's incredible.
Yeah, and then he just so darn good.
So when we first met Sergio, you also were doing your own music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was doing some solo stuff for a while. I haven't touched that in probably
'cause you had an album, right, or an EP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had it was a full album, and it was like a culmination of like probably almost 10 years worth of writing, and then just kind of condensing it into. I would have done it differently back then.
Why don't you write now?
I think I got burned out, and with my own writing, I was writing some kind of complicated. It was very intricate, like guitar. It was like blues based, but then yes, I was doing a lot of like open tunings, and you know, it was super creative, and I loved doing it. But I think I got really burned out because of like the, you know, it's very time consuming, and plus I'm, you know, wasn't making any money doing it. It's, you know, labor of love. So I had to find other ways to make money. But and then eventually I, you know, we met. And then later on I got with the Dives. That started as a couple other names, but then I was writing again, but I was writing for the band.
Right.
So that's kind of how it went.
Is that still possible of a thing, or just?
I think it is, but
different paths at this point.
Different, sort of. Like I suppose we do have to have a discussion about it, but
it was such positive music, and your videos were fun.
Yeah.
It was like almost like a throwback to bands where it was like short films.
Yeah. Videos,
you know, which.
Well, like Mike is he graduated. He's a film student. So he always had this kind of idea. Weird. And then his friend, one of his friends from school, was the one who was helping. His name's Nick Capra. Excellent, you know, does excellent like videos and film stuff like that. Great video. He's like, you know, there was one where it was in the video for Ready Player One. You know, we do almost like these avatar things where you get to choose your character, right? And we had, you know, we did it on a very low budget, but we had, you know, got to get creative. So he brought his... hoverboard.
Yeah.
And we had to figure out like on the fly, it's like, okay, how do we in almost a steady circle doing it around very slowly. And that's how we're rotating. It's not any sort of like editing.
Is that those one with the two wheels?
Yeah. The two wheels. And so, and I'd never ridden one before. So I took about 5 minutes. I was like, just everyone stay out of my way. This is going to be one of those like fail videos. And
wait, what was the song that you were singing earlier?
What's that?
What was the song you were singing earlier?
Fun Ways to Die. It was like that. I was like, please stay out of my way. I was like, you know, engaging every muscle in my body just to kind of stay steady. But it was like, okay, I'm a pretty calm dude as it is. But we got through it. It took maybe 20 minutes, half an hour. And we would rotate, you know, okay, get this costume on. It's like, okay, I'm a ninja. Okay, I'm a ghost or something. You know, it's like we all had like these weird little avatar characters, and I think Mike was like dad, you know, like dad bod, which I thought was hysterical. But yeah, we were like on this little segue, and just to stay in that little circle, like those were really fun. It's like it was draining. We would usually do the videos in like a day. We'd have the locations set, and we'd get through it, and we'd have a very small budget, and typically the editing like took a while because also Nick, you know, he's got a million other projects as well, so. You know, like they were fun to do, but again, it's, you know, it can be draining, and especially when competition is thick, you know, like there's a lot of other bands out there. There's a lot of other people, you know, doing the thing and trying to be visible, especially on social media, which is, you know, that's how you stay. Like it's every day, and it's like, it can be.
Yeah. Because you were running that, weren't you?
Yeah. I was running a lot of it, and you know, it's fun, but it's, yeah, it's draining, you know, it's really draining. And I hate to say it like this, but it kind of sucks the fun out of it in a weird way. Feeling that you have to be visible in this thing for people that probably aren't watching. What do they want to watch? And then you start kind of getting in your own head of like, well, what do they want? It's like you stop asking yourself, what do you want?
Yeah.
That's the hard part.
That's why I've learned like delegating and having a team around you helps with this, the success. Like your lane is to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, like, even with these podcasts, having Broadway Podcast Network, we do our thing and then they just run with it.
Yeah.
Where before I always wanted to control it and help with the editing or edit myself. I'm like, but I got to act. I got, that's my thing. Yeah. I got to make sure that's, I'm at the top of my game when it comes to that. I'm not an editor. I'm not.
Yeah.
So, but then that takes funds and people and.
It's, you know, it can be fun, but I can see even the most successful of artists, and usually the most successful artists are single human beings. Like their bands don't get as much traction as they used to. That's a little bit harder because like in order to, for an audience to stick with you, it's like, well, I want to see everybody. It's harder when it's just one or two of you, you know, it's like, you got to see the whole, you know, the unit. So that's what makes it harder. But I, you know, even people doing content every day, sometimes multiple times a day, and they get burned out. And I can certainly understand why. That's hard. That's hard to keep up with.
You have to also navigate the comments if, or stuff like that as well.
Keep up on the things you've already done. So.
How would you deal with social media?
Oh, I'm very bad at it. I just I'm bad at it. I remind myself like, I'm like, oh, I should probably post something, and then I'll be like, oh, I played a ton of shows with some cool people. I didn't take a single picture. And like, I was like, you know, I'm horrible at social media.
I bet the experience was richer for that because
totally. But that's the upside and the downside of being present in the moment, where you're like really enjoying the moment and you just live there. And I think people, younger artists who are who are successful actually enjoy the social media part of it. I think that's part of the prerequisite now. So you have to like doing that, like, you know, pictures and stuff like that.
Do you think though that, I mean, I just my opinion from outside looking in to these artists who become so big on social media, you get them in front of an actual audience and it is kind of awkward to watch, in my opinion. Because there is something to be said about development.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just curious, like what do y'all think of that? That's what I see.
So I do a lot of music direction. That's like a big part of my job, where I'm like sort of helping artists who they have their album, they have their like music out there, and they're getting their show together.
You're incredibly good at it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that a lot. And it is a totally different skill set. All these skill sets are really different.
What do you mean you direct them? They come to you and you help them?
Yeah, music direct. So I'm you know, they'll be like a pop act, and they come to me, and what they have is a record and a show date, and that's it. And they're like, I need to put on a show. What do I do? And so I'm like, okay, well, let's put together a set list. Let's, you know, like, let me make you, if it's pop music, there's probably going to be some sort of backing tracks. Let me create the backing tracks from stems or from scratch. And then let me organize the band. Let me make the arrangements for everything. Let me, like, it's like sort of like start to finish.
It's a lot of work.
Like crafting a set of music to sort of hopefully get them more fans and get them put together a show that will move people. And that's like the liaison between artists having music and artists putting on live show.
Are you finding new artists don't grasp that a set list is not just taking 12 songs? It's like, there has to be an arc to the show.
I think there is so much to grasp about putting on a show. And I think I've been doing it longer than any of these artists that I'm working, or most of these artists, not all, most of these artists that I'm working with. And so it's like, and I'm still learning new things to grasp about how to make a bunch of songs into a show. So it's like, I'm lending them my extra decade of experience and also these technical skills of like being able to use Ableton and stuff like that. And then, you know, they're giving me a new batch of music and like their personalities and like, you know, their singing or whatever they're bringing to the table. And together we're making a show. Yeah.
Do you enjoy doing that too?
I love doing it, actually. It also kind of, I used to teach a lot as well. And there's a certain mentoring aspect of it that I find really gratifying. Yeah.
See, that's why I love about our shows. And it's, I still think with, if we do another Progress tour, it's adding elements that we didn't have before. So like our last show, we had a lighting designer. Even though it was like a 24-hour conversation, it just changes it because it helps with the mood of the songs, helps with the experience for the audience and get their emotions.
What are those called? Like those old spotlights? Because I remember seeing the photos and it looks so cool. Again, why I had such FOMO about it, because I see like this awesome lighting design. I was like, oh, I like those lights. Those are really cool.
You did really knock it out of the park with those lighting.
Well, I gave him a lookbook. I'm like, something like this, but I don't know what those are called.
I mean, I've seen bands like Haim and like a couple of other artists use, when I saw those lights, I was like, oh, I remember Haim, they had those in the live show. Like,
Are those just, are they spots, just spotlights, aren't they?
I guess. They almost look like old school, like during the war, you know, like it's like, okay, we're searching, you know, it's like searchlights.
Oh, yeah.
Like
old
school ones. Okay. Everyone shut your lights off there, man. You know, watch out.
Like the prison break.
Watch out, man. That's what they had to do. Apparently back in the day, like they were afraid of like bombings over because like, you know, the enemy's planes would fly over. Like even here in like New York, Brooklyn. So the rule was everyone had to shut their lights off.
So
that they
couldn't
see what the city was, and then they had the spots up, the spotlights up. Like, that's a crazy piece of World War history.
So everyone in their homes, I mean, electricity was only a few decades old.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but it's like everyone turned the lights out. Yeah. You hear the sirens, or you hear, like, some kind of warning. And that was the, and that was just the life then for, like, for a while, I think.
Wow.
And then you'd have, like, German U-boats, like, scouting.
Yeah.
All over like the bay and like in the ocean, and like some people would see them.
Have you been in South Williamsburg on a Friday? At around.
Interesting segue, but no.
They have one of those alarms. There's one of those alarms goes off every Friday in Williamsburg.
No way.
And it's the Hasidic community, and they, I don't know where they got it, but it's.
Oh, that's right. You said South Williamsburg, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
yeah.
It's like time to go inside. You know, there's religious ritual around it. It's just so interesting to hear it every Friday.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, something to look out for if you're in Williamsburg. You can hear the cool old-fashioned siren.
I forgot that there's the big Hasidic community in South Williamsburg, which is so funny because you have like that northern part of Williamsburg.
Yeah, super hipster.
And it's hip, and there's a lot going on. I remember when it... Did you ever play at... what was it called? Oh, it'll come to me. Like, there's all those little clubs like on North 6th Street.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, going toward, like, White.
Cameo Gallery?
Like, yeah.
I loved Cameo Gallery.
But I think he used to be called something else. But, like, in Williamsburg was still kind of dodgy at the time.
Yeah.
And then it was still cheap to live. Mm-hmm. But then it's, like, become the most expensive place to live because it became
everyone's moving into Manhattan to save money.
Yeah.
It's real.
Is that crazy?
From Brooklyn.
Or Queens, something like that.
Yeah, I have a friend who just moved to the Upper East Side to save money.
That's insane.
That's what I did before. I was living in Greenpoint.
Hell's Kitchen. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Hell's Kitchen was cheaper.
Yeah.
Which is insane to say. Yeah. You know, and I was like, Greenpoint is not the easiest to get to. Because at least at the time, because the G train was a bit rough.
That's gotten so much better.
Has it?
Yeah. It's still really short though.
But yeah, the landlord tried raising the rent like $600. From one lease to another, and I'm like, he goes, oh, it's still below market value. Yeah.
I love how this conversation started. It started with talking about taking Broadgrass to the next production level. We're talking.
What are those stops?
Then we ended about talking about German U-boats.
This is kind of what it's like in the green rooms.
Williamsburg.
Yeah.
To Cameo.
Uh-huh.
Whatever that is, that a club?
Yeah, it was. It was.
Was a club
for years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You never know how a conversation's going to go here on The Hang.
It reminds me of like the green...
I was just saying, this feels like the tour bus.
Yeah, it feels like a tour bus or like the green room.
And then because there's a lull and then, should we practice wings? Sure.
Okay, you like that? It's like, have you ever been to Utah? It's like out of nowhere. It's like, this song reminds me of the mountains he's been. And then Nick will chime in. It's like, yeah, actually the Tories. And then, you know, something about, you know, something.
Then you look at Joe Kwan. Can we do music on the night and a step higher?
Like a step higher?
Nice flats.
It's too many sharps here. Too many sharps or flats.
I'll never forget. It was in Japan. And we were rehearsing downstairs in that music studio. And he's literally scratching his head with his cello bow. You're right, Joe. There's a lot of flats.
I forgot about that. He's like,
there's a lot of flats. So what's the problem? He goes, can't you sing a semitone higher? So it's easier for me to play. It's on the open strings. I'm like, just take it up, shall we?
We did. What was the song?
That's amazing.
Was it an Avett tune where you played it in the wrong key and we'd been practicing it? And I was
Beaches,
like,
if it's a Beaches.
I was like, and as we're playing it, I go, I'm going to have to play that riff, but because it's in the key it's in, I'm going to have to stretch further than I ever have.
All I remember, this was
we
at
just
our
switched,
running
didn't
gigs.
We? Yeah. We just like,
because the song starts with just me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then me and Nick were like,
all I remember is I was starting, don't say it's over. That's the worst news I could hear. And I can, you know, when you can, the energy behind you, people are moving and I'm thinking, something's going on behind me, but it's you passing a message. He's in the semitone iron. He's in a different key. And you can see Joe like, oh, for fuck's sake. And he gets back to you. And then you hope when we all come in on that one chord together.
Yeah. But I remember I have that little riff, you know. And I remember out of the corner of my eye, like, Joe and Tanya have to stop. They stop playing, basically, and it's just on me. And I just remember I see Bo stop, and then I see two heads go like this. And he did it, and I look over at them. They go, "You did it." Yeah. I was like, and you look at me, you go, "I'm so sorry." It was so funny.
Yeah.
But I was like, I feel like a real musician now.
Really done it.
I done did it.
How many times did I start a song after looking at the set list and I go and they're like, he's on song 5 now. I even looked at the list.
It's like, oh man. It was, that was fun. Those were really, really fun gigs.
Yeah.
We got to put a show together. Just us three.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'd love to. An intimate
set somewhere.
Yeah.
We can have a small audience. We can film it to stream it later.
Oh, that'd be so fun.
But like I'm not, stream. When you, I don't know how you guys get, now whenever there's even a big production show we're going to announce or do, if I'm part of something, even Funny Girl, you guys going to stream it? Oh, do you get that a lot?
Wow.
Man.
Wait, even for Funny Girl?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I don't like this age of like everything getting streamed.
No, there's live experiences.
Yeah.
100%. Not everything's meant to be streamed.
Pandemic kind of changed the thinking behind that, though, because we were, you know, the stuck at home.
Because the things like Phantom that they do, but there was a lot of thought to that. There were 17 cameras. Like, we're talking like, I'm thinking
that's
at least $500,000 production value.
I wonder if people know.
Like, it's so expensive.
It's expensive.
No,
it's
I was going to say the expense behind something like that. It's, I can't even.
And also, I know you need to sound good. Like, I mean.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
And then the performance, it changes too. Because like when we were doing Phantom at the Royal Albert Hall, the way we performed that, I was performing knowing that, okay, is this camera's picking me up. Now this camera's, because I'm like, I know there's an audience here, but come tomorrow, what lives is what's going to be on DVD. So you're acting for camera.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why, like, when you see cell phones or people trying to do like quick things to put together, like there's a production company that I work for, I'm going back to Zhivago for, Lambert Jackson, they started filming stuff with the pandemic, but you know, it took they worked their butts off.
Yep. Yeah.
And all it takes then in this day and age, people then stream it illegally or whatever. And it's like, but then what's all that work everyone did that they're not going to recoup?
Because
if they can't recoup, they're not doing it again.
It's also such a special thing to be in a moment. Like, just like that is how life is. It's not recorded. You know, I guess
that being said, we should do a set that we're going to stream.
Yeah, we should stream.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
but like, no, it made me think because recently, you know, I know I watch a lot of sports, but LeBron just broke the all-time like points record. Beat Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But there was a particular my man, what a Nick game, you know. So there was a particular still shot, and it's when. It was the points that basically broke the record. And it was like this just beautiful fade shot, just very simple, or at least for LeBron, not for me. But someone on the other side of the arena was right on it. It was a camera, like right on him. And it was a still shot. And you just see everyone just like this, right? Yeah. They're not watching him.
Yeah.
There was but, I think, two or three people in that one photo. And you have... This is at least a couple thousand people just in this one still shot. And they're all doing this, right? Wild. And then the only two was, I remember there was this one woman that had her camera down and just, she's like, I'm in it.
Yeah.
I'm watching. And it was Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. And he was just staring at him, just looking like, oh, man. And there's his logo right there as well. Like, that's his brand, you know, because LeBron has the Nike brand. But it was like, and then, I remember someone posted like a still shot of Jordan shooting a game winning shot and just everyone just, you know, in that experience, like I was like, Jordan, like that's my era. Like that's what I loved. And I still love that, you know, like, I like getting some camera, but like it's, you're never going to watch it again, you know, but I like kind of being in it and just like hearing it. I'll take the earplugs out just for a little bit and then put them back in just to like kind of feel the music, because one thing coming out of the pandemic is like, I've got to go see more live shows.
Yeah.
Like, I need that. Like, I forgot. Like, I saw Rage Against the Machine, and that was like a postponed tour from 2 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And it was just, I remember just like my body like fell. It was like more like, and everybody in there, and then you just hear, you know, of course, you know, Killing in the Name of comes on.
How does that chorus go?
And you do what they told you.
Yeah.
But you're hearing.
Keep going, remind me. What's the rest of the chorus sound like?
Do you want? Can we?
I just want to hear it.
Can we curse? I'm gonna call my mom first. Ask if it's okay. Mom, me cool?
Chorus,
no.
So how's the rest of it go?
No, I feel dirty now. I got nervous. Yeah, but it's like I posted a video of it on my Instagram, but it's like just. Which is ironic, but I wanted that. But that moment I will watch again because it reminded me how much I love live shows. I started from the back of the arena and then it was just all red. And you hear, dun, dun, and you do what they tell. It's like 20,000 people doing that in unison.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh man, everyone's in it. It's like,
yeah,
I
but that's
missed
a moment you took. You're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole
no,
show.
I wasn't filming the whole show, yeah. But it's like, you know, and I saw Pearl Jam, and they played like 2.5 hours, and it was incredible.
What was that live show like?
That was incredible. They started with, I think it was Oceans. And I remember when they got to Release, you know, Release Me, that, and it was just like a religious experience. It was crazy. And but also to that point, like how expensive it can be, their lighting design, I don't know who did it. It was fantastic. It was just like this crazy loop of lighting, and then things would like kind of drop and move around. It was beautiful, and they started the set sitting down on stools.
Amazing.
Yeah, almost like they were rehearsing. It was awesome, and Vedder came out looking as cool as he does. Man. And apparently Harry Styles left a jacket behind, and it was like all sparked. So Eddie came out. I think Harry Styles left something. I'm probably gonna keep it. And it was just like this gold sparkle. It was like fabulous.
Amazing.
And like they put the spot, it's like sparkly. It was like, oh.
We need more of this.
I know. We need more of this. Okay. 2, 3. And they could go to like Even Flow or something.
Amazing.
It was so fun, man. I was like, I missed those experiences.
So hopefully we'll look towards you getting on stage and doing some more live stuff, whether it's with me, whether it's with the Dives, or maybe solo. Maybe you guys
I miss your solo sets. I used to go see you play at Rockwood. Love that.
You've always said that.
Why don't we come up
with
a night?
That,
why don't
man?
We do a night where it's us three? You do 20 minutes of your stuff. You do 20 minutes of your stuff,
that'd
and then
so
we'll do 40
fun.
Minutes of our stuff.
That would be so
I would,
fun.
I would have.
You'd resurrect.
I,
would you
I
resurrect?
Would resurrect. I'd, man, I have to.
Or
reach.
We can go around.
I have to retrain,
you know,
myself.
Like we just sit there and then you do one now. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the
oh,
round.
That'd be so fun.
Yeah.
Love that.
Riders in the round.
On that note, do you want to sing us out with what? How's it go? O-E-I-O.
Oh, I'm not gonna do that one.
Oh, which one did you
I'll
say?
Do the,
oh no,
I'll
whatever
do,
it takes.
Yeah, the one that you said.
Yeah.
Because my foot's broken.
Yeah, no, I'll go get the guitar.
Thank you so much, darling.
My foot's broken.
Yeah, are you hearing it?
Yeah.
All right. Lipstick on a bit lip to try to make do, and I couldn't help thinking it was such a shame. The makeup doesn't cover up what you've been through. I haven't set foot outside in days. No, I don't mind. I don't think you're crazy. Baby, it's fine. Whatever keeps you from aching. Whatever keeps you from aching. Whatever keeps you from aching. Try for a smile, but they never make it. And eyelids hang like heavy loads. And I crack a stupid joke just to try and break in. Barricades around the pain that's got you feeling low. Oh, no, I don't mind. And no, I don't think you're crazy. Baby, it's fine. Whatever keeps you from aching. Cause this shit's insane. So it's okay if you wanna. If you wanna lie. Though it's okay if you wanna. If you wanna hide from me, I can be patient. When you wanna cry on me, gonna be here waiting. Whatever keeps you from aching. Whatever keeps you from aching.
Thank you. Sergio, Alan, thanks for the hang.
Such a pleasure.
Thank you.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.